Hi. Did you know that you can watch Last Podcast on the Left and Side Stories on our Patreon right now?
Yes, that's patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. But over on TikTok, you can see the hottest, tightest, funniest clips from the show right there.
It's TikTok.
TikTok. It's at LP on the Left. It's the same as our Instagram. You already follow the Instagram. Why don't you go follow TikTok?
But it's on TikTok.
Yeah, because seeing is believing.
Yep.
So just go check it out. Watch it.
Go send our podcast to China.
I love TikTok the crocodile. It's my favorite TikTok.
It's the only one he knows.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the Last Podcast
on the Left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Spring break!
Spring break!
Chug, 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 chug.
Oh God, she's not waking up! Oh God, she's not waking up, Trevor! What are we gonna do, Trevor? I'm in law school!
Get the poppers, man!
Oh, Trevor, man, we're in trouble deep, friend! It doesn't fucking matter! Play with my butt! Play with my fucking butt!
Welcome to the Last Podcast on the Left, ladies and gentlemen.
Really fun way to get into it.
I'm Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zebrowski and Ed Larson, and we're on spring break, y'all.
We are on spring break. We're having a good time.
Everybody's showing them.
Yeah, he is. And ooh, the beads are accumulating. But you aren't on spring break, so you have to hear us talk. And this was fun as hell, is that we recorded this interview with this incredibly fascinating woman, Karen Conti, who worked with, would you say your favorite, Eddie?
I wouldn't say my favorite. I like him because I always root for the fat guy.
We all do.
You know, like that's why I think he might be my favorite,
yeah.
But only because he's fat.
Well, we just get
like, if there's
over
a fat quarterback, that quarterback is now my favorite quarterback.
Oh yeah, Cecil Fielder.
Yeah, exactly.
Cecil Fielder was a baseball player. favorite. What we like to say here is we like to say most interesting.
Who we find
the most interesting.
That works.
Yeah. Who you find the most interesting is John Wayne Gacy. And John Wayne Gacy was represented by Karen Conti when he was on death row, and she wrote a book about it called Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy Defending America's Most Evil Serial Killer on Death Row. She's got some stories.
Oh my gosh. I mean, imagine that. Just like every day you go in and you're just hanging with Gacy.
Though, honestly, I kind of know what it feels like now.
So here it is, our interview with Karen Conti. Enjoy very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Live from your grave.
All right, people, we are here with the author of Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy, Defending America's Most Evil Serial Killer on Death Row. Karen Conti, how you doing today?
Doing really well. I'm so excited to be on your podcast.
This is amazing. I just want to say, number one, does meeting John Wayne Gacy, when you meet him, are you like, God, I love being a lawyer?
No, usually I don't get asked that. The question I usually get asked is, were you afraid of him? And of course, you guys would know the answer is no.
No.
You know, he was as normal as can be. And he was like your favorite uncle. And what was chilling was to know that the Gacys of the world are out there looking completely normal. And you just look around you and you wonder, who am I working with? Who am I sitting on the bus with? Who's just like Gacy, normal on the outside, but a horror show on the inside.
Well, first of all, let's start with what your relationship with Gacy was.
Well, first of all, Gacy was committing his crimes in the 70s, and I was in high school at the time. So he was sentenced to death for killing 33 young men and boys, burying most of them under his house. So flash ahead, I'm now a lawyer. I get the call to go down there. And I was just curious. I didn't have any intention of really representing him because I never did a death penalty case before. I didn't do criminal defense on that level. And so, but I wanted to look evil in the eyes. So I did. And when I got down there, I realized I wanted to represent him in his death row appeals because I've never believed in the death penalty. It's just something that I don't believe in, not even for Gacy's of the world. I think it's wrong. But I had to develop a relationship with him. I had to talk to him. I was on the phone with him every day. I spent hours on death row with him. And so I kind of developed a very friendly relationship with him. I'm not saying I was his friend, but it was congenial. It was humorous. He was kind to me. He was kinder to me than the other lawyers, I think because I was a female. But I will tell you that I have had other clients who have been a lot less likable than John Wayne Gacy.
Wow, that's a what a heck of a report card. Can I ask, like, when you, like, one thing just to clear up, like, legal-wise, like, what is, like, the difference when you're trying a case for the first time than when you're going through an appeals process? Like, as you're walking him through, like, what is different about that than if you were going to be representing him first up?
Well, you know, a trial, you know, you're going to trial with him. You're getting all the tests to make sure that he's not insane. Or, you know, you're preparing for trial, looking at exhibits and doing all that kind of stuff, preparing cross-examination and the like. And so that's a daily issue. The appeals are far removed from the trial. And by the time I got involved, we weren't trying to get him out of jail. We weren't trying to say he was actually innocent because that would have been going nowhere. But what we were trying to do is to stop the execution. And there are a whole bunch of arguments that death penalty lawyers make in that regard, regarding like the method of execution, and that it's cruel and unusual, and those types of things. So they're more creative, they're more removed, and you're going to the appellate court, not a trial court every day.
So he is like, it's a less intense process. And would you say that then he has more kind of say with how it's done? Like, do you feel like, what is a more client-centered approach? Is it the original or the appeals? Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't understand because I'm done.
Well, in a trial, you're sitting by your client day in and day out for a period of time, whether that's 2 months or 6 weeks or 2 days. So you're with that client the whole time, and you're going into the jail cell at night to prepare him for the next day. And yes, there are strategy things you have to do, but in an appeals process, you're not just doing one thing. You have all these different appeals going. You want to stop the execution this way. We have an international appeal we're filing in Washington. We're filing cases to the U.S. Supreme Court and we're submitting them. So it's intense in that there's a lot of work involved, and some of them are work that you have to do overnight because you have time deadlines, but you're not sitting with him all day long making those decisions and trying the case. But, you know, you do need someone's cooperation when you're having these appeals filed because you need him to approve of what you're doing.
Yeah. So when you were interacting with John Wayne Gacy on those times that you had to go see him, like, what were you talking to him about? Like, what were you talking about, strategy or just getting to know him as a client?
Well, both. And in order to get to him, to get him to talk to me about the decisions he needed to make, you had to kind of manipulate him back. He was a very manipulative guy. So he would divert your attention. He'd talk to me about something personal because he wanted to get information from me so he could use it later to try to manipulate me. That's how he was. But he was better with me than with the male lawyers. So he was actually very soft and feminine with me. He talked about cooking. He talked about gardening. And so we would have a good half an hour where we would just talk BS, and then that would get him to relax. And then I'd present the things that we needed to have him sign on. And he was very oppositional. I don't know if you've ever been around someone who, if you say yes, he's going to say no. You say no, he's going to say yes. So Gacy had to do the end run to kind of make him think that he thought up this great appeal. And then he would finally eventually sign on. But I spent a lot of time asking him questions that had nothing to do with the appeals, just because I'm a curious human being. And I wanted to figure out, why did he become what he became?
Yeah, what did you,
yeah, like, what did you think?
Yeah, yeah. How did you open that door?
Well, you know, I would just talk to him. I'd say, John, you know, you're sitting here, you're accused of all these things. You know, you have these young men and boys buried under your house, and he denied he did it. And I said, well, then how did they get there? He says, the only thing I'm guilty of is running a cemetery without a license.
Wow.
So yeah,
he used that line on you. That's such a classic true crime line.
It's a classic true crime line. And Gacy may have originated it, though. So that was a long time ago. So, I would say things I would be direct with him. I'd say, Johnny read a lot of the psychiatric reports and it sounds like your dad was a real ogre and he used to beat you up and call you gay and call you all these different kinds of things. And then he would fight me on it, say my dad wasn't that bad, but, he was a son of a bitch. And yeah, he did do that. And I asked him about being sexually abused because that's in the psychiatric reports. He refused to talk to me really about that. I asked him a lot of questions about his childhood. It seemed to me that he was always effeminate and he grew up with this name, John Wayne Gacy. And John Wayne, of course, was the macho cowboy who his father wanted him to take after. And he wasn't that. He wasn't athletic. He didn't like to hunt and fish and do all the things that boys do. And so he really gravitated toward his mother, who was a kind, loving person. He had two sisters who are fabulous. In fact, I became friends with one of them for the last 30 years. And he really liked his wives that, who he married. So he liked women. He associated with them more than men. And so, that was a big part of how I dealt with him.
Now, did you work for the state? Did he employ you? Who paid you?
Nobody paid me.
Really?
So at that point,
so by the book,
by a few of them actually. So at that point, all the traditional appeals were done. So he had run out of state-funded attorneys. And so everyone at that point volunteers. And if you do this kind of work, if you do criminal defense work, it's very common that you take on some causes that are high profile in nature or important in the cause. And we do this for several reasons. First, we believe in the cause. And when you're representing a John Wayne Gacy, you're not just representing him. You're representing all the people on death row, not only in Illinois, but all over. And you're making these arguments to kind of move the needle forward, pardon the pun, abolish the death penalty. So we take on these cases because they're important. And, I'd say we donated about $250,000 to the Gacy Fund. And that was real hard on us. That's not easy on anyone. And it wasn't easy on us.
What was your positioning in the appeal? So what was your case for John Wayne Gacy to say that he was innocent, that he should not go to the death penalty?
There were a bunch of them. One of them was in an international commission. The machine in Illinois that's used was invented by a Holocaust revisionist, and he used Nazi research to create this machine. He wasn't a doctor. He wasn't an engineer. He was just an idiot. He was just a guy, random guy. He had been arrested for denying the Holocaust happened, which is a crime in certain countries. Jesus. And he went to Nazi research, and you can't do that. You can't use Nazi research to invent or do anything because it's obviously wrong morally, and it's against international treaty. But that's
yeah. I won't even buy a VW bug.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
And by the way, all executioners and everyone who comes up with executions are all just guys. There's no university to go to for execution.
There should be.
It's like being a studio executive.
Well, and there's no doctors can't be involved.
Yeah, Hippocratic Oath.
And they can't inject the lethal injection. They can't do that. They would lose their license. So you have all these amateurs making these amateur machines, and you have the amateurs injecting, and the lines are getting clogged, and you see them all the time, the botched executions. And that's what happened with Gacy. And we also predicted it wasn't going to work because it had malfunctioned in the past, and it in fact did. So we made these arguments that that was cruel and unusual. We made the arguments that a doctor should have been the one doing it, but couldn't, and therefore there was no execution. We made, the best argument we made, nobody listened to. It's a little complicated, but Gacy got only 7 death sentences out of the 33 because during the time the other boys and men were killed, we didn't have a death penalty because it was deemed unconstitutional. So yes. We found his records. His records were in storage, and they showed meticulously that he was out of town during most of those 7 murders. And you're asking me, well, then what happened? He had other boys and men living with him at the time, and 2 of them testified they dug the trenches, and it's beyond my comprehension that they didn't know what was going on and that they didn't actually participate in some of these deaths. And in fact, one victim who escaped with horrible injuries, told the police that there was more than one perpetrator inflicting the harm on him. So I think he had, I think other, those other boys either helped him or did some of them on their own.
Live from your grave.
I think this is a part where I am fascinated. I saw an interview that you did that you guys were all kind of banding about this idea that John Wayne Gacy might have been inspired by Dean Corll, and that the serial killer Dean Corll, and that some of that, the idea of the torture board and using kids as accomplices, was like he might have been inspired by that coverage. Like, is there any real, like, hard evidence? Because the guy you brought up was Philip Paskey. That was like, he was somewhere, he was working. Because, like, I got fascinated with the connection of Dean Corll, John Wayne Gacy, and this man by the name of John David Norman, that I'm trying to figure out, like, how you put all of this together, who was a child pornographer, and who was a distributor of child pornography across the country. And there was rumors that some of Dean Corll's victims were featured in some of the video work that John David Norman had sold. Now, like, is there any physical evidence that ties anything, or is this still just sort of like, well, he just wasn't there, so it might have been one of these people?
I don't think that the researchers who have devoted literally their lives to looking at these intersections have come up with any definitive fact that ties them together. There are a lot of coincidences. Like you said, the method of execution, it was like Gacy read the playbook of Dean Corll. And the whole idea that Dean Corll had two apprentices who were, they would go out and procure the boys, and they would get paid per boy. And if they were good looking, they would get paid more. But there was very, very similar things. And there's a lot of speculation from people who know more than I do that there could have been just a ring of men who liked this kind of thing, and that Gacy may have been recording this stuff. There may have been a snuff film operation. They apparently took a lot of sophisticated at the time film equipment out of Gacy's house that was never seen again. Apparently, Gacy had lists of people that were also, that were never found again, important people that may have been part of a ring of this type. So, you know, we can speculate, but I just don't have any specific facts that definitively tells us that that's what happened.
And none of his art runners, like, because at the time when you were working with him, like, that was also, it was this after he already was told he could not profit off of his paintings anymore and, like, his work?
Well, first of all, a lot of people don't know this, but the Son of Sam laws were all stricken down because the First Amendment allows prisoners to do their art and to make money. But what the prison did to Gacy was, there's a statute in Illinois that says if you can afford your incarceration, then you have to pay. So at the time, it was like $35,000 a year to stay at Chalet Menard Correctional Center. And so they sued him. And so, of course, Gacy said, well, just evict me.
So
actually, we handled that case and we used it to say, hey, you know what? You sued Gacy, so we have to extend the execution until the case is resolved. So the state resolved the case very quickly, and Gacy didn't pay anything because he really truly didn't have much at all.
Well, I know, like, Gacy, like, to that point, like, Gacy is one of the few serial killers who had, like, kind of an entourage on the outside. Like, did you have any dealings with those people that kind of did Gacy's bidding on the outside?
I did. One of them was a relative, and there were a couple lawyers who were involved, and I don't really know exactly what they got out of it, but I'm sure they got something out of it. But that was how Gacy worked. In fact, one of the creepiest things about representing Gacy was he had this book that he called the Body Book that was a scrapbook of every single one of his victims, color-coded, tabbed, and he had enlisted and paid a private investigator up in Canada to go and get all these pictures from the yearbooks of these boys, the family home, the family dog, the Little League newspaper article, the day the kid went missing, the article that was. So this was at a time before the internet. So yeah. This guy would had to have gone to the newspapers and got the microfiche or the newspapers and cut them out. So this was a lot of work and it was very expensive. But that's what Gacy did. When he had money, he would get people to do his bidding, whatever that was.
Wow. So how did you ever, like, kind of ask him, well, if you didn't kill any of these kids, where are you keeping a scrapbook of every single one of them?
Oh, oh, yeah. And I said, John, why are you calling it a body book? These are boys and men. They're human beings. And he responded to me, well, what were they doing out late that night anyway? So that's when you catch Gacy off guard. And yeah, he tells you what he really thinks, which is they're not human beings. That's what he told me.
Did John, how come John Wayne Gacy, why do you think he didn't throw his accomplices under the bus?
Yeah. And
that was my, I guess that's my one question. Do you think that he just like, because I feel like Dean Corll got close and they stopped
Dean Corll got killed.
He got killed.
Like he
saying.
Got killed before he
by
even.
By one of his apprentices.
Yeah, yes, but before he before he even spoke with police, Dean Corll was.
But I think
pop.
That you could see maybe at some point, because they were saying, right, that Wayne, what's his name?
Henley.
He maybe Henley. Saw for a second, oh, I might be next. I might be on this block.
Yeah.
Kind of we talk about with the Ken and Barbie murders with Carla Homolka, and we wonder whether or not she felt the same way. Oh, maybe I'm next. Maybe it's time for me to flip. Like, I wonder why, like, no one, he wouldn't have just been like, I didn't do it. Here's the five guys that did it.
Yeah, I have a couple thoughts on that. I think my strongest thought is that he wanted credit for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that he's going to go down, you know, and he's going to be executed. Because even if he killed two of them, he still would, you know, he probably would have stayed in jail or gotten the death penalty. I think he wanted credit for all of them. I had a really interesting conversation with him. I was talking about Henry Lee Lucas, and I said, John, Henry Lee Lucas, like he's blowing your, you know, numbers out of the water. I would kid him. He would get so mad, and he knew all the things. And this was no internet, right? They didn't have internet back then, and he wouldn't have had it in the prison. He knew all about the big, he was tagged with 232. He didn't do all those. They wanted to close cases. There's no way he did that. That guy's a fraud. You know, he would have these arguments with me. So I think he was in a way proud of his world record, which it was at the time. So as creepy as that is, I think that was the main reason.
I also heard some talk that John Wayne Gacy, it is quite possible that he killed outside of his home and he killed when he was on the road. Have you heard it or any of that? Or what are your thoughts on the idea that John Wayne Gacy might have had other murders attached to him, but way outside of his house?
Well, remember that Gacy was convicted of molesting a young man in Iowa before he started his killing spree in Chicago. Yeah. He was sentenced to 10 years. He served two. And there are people who I know who have researched this that tie Gacy to two murders up in Iowa before that happened. Wow. I don't have confirming facts on that, but that's very possible. When he got to Chicago, you know, he started this crime spree and it started to escalate. There were nights where he would go out and abduct one child, then go back and abduct another one and then kill and go back and do another one, you know. And so he was escalating. Now, during this time, he was out of town doing these like Bressler's ice cream construction jobs. So we saw his records. He was in rural Wisconsin. He was in Pacific Northwest. He was in Florida. And you can't tell me that he would take a 3-week trip during his crime spree and not continue it, particularly because these places, it would have been easier for him to get boys and obviously to do his dirty deeds and to bury them. So, you know, someday some really ambitious podcaster is going to go and look at those records and figure out where in Wisconsin he was, when were there boys and men who went missing during that time, and maybe tie them to Gacy. I don't know that we'll ever get a definitive answer, but my guess is that, yes, there are other victims.
Yeah, I saw a really good documentary on the Soft White Underbelly YouTube channel of someone talking about how they are dead certain that they were near miss from John Wayne Gacy while he was staying at a motel. And it's very interesting. So, yeah, I do feel like, yeah, why would he pause being John Wayne Gacy because he's on a work trip?
Yeah. And there's also, I know there's also a lot of speculation that he murdered or that he buried other victims at some of the construction sites around Chicago. So it's likely that it was far more than just 33. But, you know, one of the questions I want to ask is as far as, you know, saving him from, you know, or trying to save him from being executed. I mean, I know part of the reason, I mean, all of us are also anti-death penalty people. And, you know, it's not just because it's morally wrong, but because, you know, you also lose whatever information that person may have had when they die. So what secrets do you think died with John Wayne Gacy? that we may have got out of him eventually?
I think the two things we talked about are probably the top ones, and that is, you know, more victims and more perpetrators. But, you know, it could be that if we could have cut a deal for him to live the rest of his life in prison, and he could have given us some information, like, about this crime ring, or was there a snuff film operation, or were there other police, were there police who were covering for him? And again, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but if you read in my book and you read some of the other books on Gacy, he was caught so many times where a kid would disappear. Mr. Gacy, said the cop, where, you know, you were last seen with this kid. Where'd he go? I don't know. He's a runaway. I have no idea. Happened time and time again. The kid who gets out totally, you know, damaged from Gacy, he gets, Gacy gets charged. Police drop the charges. How come they didn't know that Iowa, there was that conviction in Iowa? And I know we didn't have the database at the time, but someone should have known that he had served time for the same thing that kind of was looking like it was happening. There were so many passes that he got. Was someone protecting him? Again, I don't know, but that's something that I would like to have known from Gacy.
Well, do you think that has something to do with, like, just the inherent homophobia of police officers? Because we've seen that, well, like, we saw that with Dean Kroll, we saw that with Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah. Like, we saw it again and again, where for the longest time, police just thought anything having to do with homosexuality was a little bit icky, and they just kind of didn't want to deal with it. Do you think maybe Gacy had something to do, like, Gacy going free had something to do with that?
I absolutely think that's the case. I also think that a lot of these boys, not all of them, were runaways or male prostitutes, or the police thought they were male prostitutes because Gacy would disparage them. You know, so whenever Gacy was confronted, he's like, oh, that kid, he's a drug addict. And, he ran away and he was trying to hustle me for sex. And so, you know, he was very good at that. So the police would be like, oh, you know, throw away. And that's, you know, it's how a lot of serial killers get away with it. You know, they target people who aren't going to be missed or who aren't going to, you know, provoke a real active police search. In fact, the last kid, Rob Peast, a beautiful young man, his mother, it was her birthday, drives him to the drugstore to apply for a job with a man who had a construction company. That was the last she saw of her son. He had taken him to his house, you know, raped him and killed him and put him in the crawl space. So you're talking about, you're talking about mostly kids who are not going to be missed right away. But Peast was the one where their mother said, Go look at that guy. And that's what caused Gacy to be caught.
Yeah. And I am also doing my best to not become a conspiracy theorist again as well, when you also wonder whether or not there were people in law enforcement that were involved with some of the, maybe not in an official capacity, but in a kind of a casual capacity at various things like functions at John Wayne Gacy's house, things that you probably knew he had in that house that you did not, maybe you thought it was kind of weird or icky and they didn't want to be kind of announced that they knew that they were also a part of that.
There's so many things. I'm sure your listeners have seen the iconic picture of Gacy next to Rosalind Carter.
Oh, yeah. We just opined on the beauty of Rosalind Carter last week.
Yes, what a lovely lady, rest her soul. Had she only known, she would have probably died a lot sooner.
Side note, did you know she met both John Wayne Gacy and Jim Jones in the same year?
Oh, there, yeah.
She had a good year.
Wow. You just meet too many people when you're that popular. Yeah.
But I mean, so the Secret Service is following her around during this Polish Day parade or whatever it was that he was running. And the job of the Secret Service is to make sure that she's not surrounded by felons who have violent felony convictions like Gacy. So where was the Secret Service in doing their due diligence? I mean, that's another thing. Like, how did all of that happen? You know, again, like, I can't imagine a police officer protecting a known murderous pedophile, but are they looking the other way because he had something on them? You know, it may be that, you know, back then being gay was not something you came out about. You know, you covered it up and you could lose your whole job and your career if you were outed. So Gacy may have had the dirt on people.
Oh, yeah.
And just said, you know, stay away from my house. Don't ask me any questions or I'm going to, you know, look at this list. And I could see Gacy doing that. That's exactly a Gacy move.
Or it could, they all can kind of agree that they're quote unquote cleaning up the streets of non-wanted people. Ugh. That's what they do too.
Yeah, that's also
true. I hope that's not the case.
The Polish Day Parade, actually, at night.
The funny Polish joke.
Funny Polish
that's
joke.
A funny Polish joke.
I'm Polish. I'm allowed to make
He's allowed.
You are allowed.
Yeah. Two-thirds of this podcast is Polish.
Yes, yeah, it's true. Yeah. You know, we might ask one dumb question. One dumb question I know that you wanted to ask, which is sad, and I'm sorry we're going to do this, but what did John Wayne Gacy smell like?
Oh, I can smell it right now. It was a combination of, like, Brill cream.
Yeah.
Because he used that in his hair to like comb it back. And prisoners always have the smell of not body odor, but sweat because they don't shower often. Yeah. So, you know, that smell that you just, someone hasn't taken a shower in 4 or 5 days. But that, and it also, he also had a little bit of a sweet smell from some kind of cheap cologne that he bought at the commissary because I asked him about it.
Wow.
So
it was you know how a smell can bring you back to that time? I can smell it like it was yesterday.
Wow. So I guess, like, I mean, let's stick with like Gacy the man for a second. Like, was he kind of a, like, was he a storyteller or was he more of just like a quippy type guy where you just, you wouldn't really get nothing but snippets out of him?
He was, you know, some people are storytellers and some people are one-liners. He would be, he's more of a one-liner.
Yeah.
But he did like to talk. He was very glib. And I guess that is one of the qualities that antisocial people have. They, you know, they just talk. They don't want any extra time that's silent. So Gacy was a big, big talker, but he didn't just talk about himself. He actually asked a lot of questions, but I think, again, that's garnering information. And Gacy was very smart, and but not educated. So you would hear his grammar was not so good, but he was very smart. And the one thing I talk about in my book is that he had somewhat of a photographic memory when it came to things not in, in writing. So I told him, he asked me where I grew up, and I told him, and it was not anywhere near where he grew up. And he said, oh, I remember, I told him where I worked on a street, you know, it's intersection. And he said, oh, there was this building and that second building was built in like the 1800s. And then there was a, that other car dealership and whatever. And he could name the entire block. So then I thought, this is BS. He's just making it up because he's full of BS. So that weekend, I was going to visit my mother, who, by the way, wasn't pleased with my career choice.
Yeah.
and we went past that intersection. And would you know, he was absolutely right about every single one of those. And he hadn't been there for 16, 17 years. How did he remember that?
So every single time he says he didn't remember, he was full of absolute shit.
Yes. Wow. He had an amazing memory, especially visual memories. And when he was arrested and he confessed to his first lawyer, he actually drew a map of where all the kids were buried, almost like completely accurate.
Yeah, so, Sam Amaranti, that was his first lawyer,
Sam,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Sam, that we, when we did a Gacy episode many years back, we read his book. And he, yeah, he compared himself to John Adams in the first chapter.
He's a fun guy.
He's sir, a fun, yeah. you are no John Adams.
So somebody had to defend those British soldiers and somebody had to defend John Wayne Gacy.
And, it was me.
And that like man the, was me.
Yeah, we played the national anthem behind him. And
I'm embarrassed for our profession.
Yeah. I guess one last wrap-up question. Honestly, all of your like experience as a lawyer, can you give our audience some advice? Is there anybody like, what do you do to not end up like John Wayne Gacy? Besides just not killing. I think not killing is a really
That's the best way
to avoid.
Yeah, choosing not to kill on a daily basis is probably a good move.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to be serious for maybe 1 minute.
Please.
You know, and I say this because I just wanted to understand what he became. I do not believe that little babies are evil. I don't believe that. I believe that there is a combination of things that happen to a person that causes this. I mean, Gacy was sexually abused. He was beaten by his father, but a lot of people have those in their backgrounds and don't do what he did. He had two very serious head traumas, which are known to get rid of the empathy factor in your head or impulse control issues. And he was gay. He knew he was and had those leanings, but he was raised in a very strict Catholic upbringing at a time where you couldn't be gay. So if you combine all of those things The theory that I've heard espoused that makes more sense to me is that he was killing himself over and over when he was killing these boys. And so advice to people is raise your children right. And if you see them, you know, torturing animals or bedwetting or setting fires, get the kid to help immediately.
Oh, yeah, that's actually the same advice that we've been given on our show for years. It's nice to know we're in agreement on that. Henry had one more question about Kate Gacy's food choices.
This is dumb. This is dumb. And one more dumb question. This is what I could
figure. I got one too.
This is Chicago astrology. What is his favorite pierogi flavor? Was he allowed to have pierogies in jail? Was he? Because I know he was a Polish. That man must have consumed more Polish food than anybody.
You can make a pierogi in jail. All you need is flour and a filling.
I just don't
have potatoes.
He never told me about that, but he did give me recipes for commissary food, which was really special. Like there was one, and I'm going to get it wrong, but you take a bag of like Fritos, you crush them all up, and you put some kind of goopy, you know, whatever you have, mayonnaise or whatever, and you put it in the microwave, and it's like a tamale or something. I mean, you know, he had all of these recipes. So actually, I put one in the book. He did like to eat. And usually when I go there, because I'm kind of a health, I'm kind of a muscle.
Yeah, you're ripped. Wow. Yeah, so, you're very strong.
I was like, I'm not eating this shit. Sorry, I'm not eating this food. But I didn't want to appear to be like not grateful that some other inmate sacrificed their meal for me. So I pushed it around. I say, John, you know, I'm just not hungry. You know, could you eat this? And he would eat the whole thing. Yeah,
wow. Yeah,
of course. Oh, of course. Well, yeah, he was. I think he was head of the commissary with the first time he went to prison, right?
Like,
yeah.
I know he did some cooking.
Yeah, yeah, I know when he went in for sodomy, when he went in for the kid.
Now, were you? Because you obviously were defending him to try to not get the death penalty removed, but were you there when the death penalty was enacted on him?
No, and it's interesting. The lawyers were not allowed to be with him, and I thought that was
why is that
wrong? Because you're entitled to a lawyer at every step of the process, and you would think that the most important part of your representation when someone's going to be executed that you would have a right to a lawyer. But in Illinois, that's not the case. And interestingly, the victims' families were not entitled to be there in person. They could be like with a live video feed, so it was a lottery. So a lot of the media was there to witness the execution.
Wow.
Jeez, a little.
And what do you think about his last words? Kiss my ass.
He didn't say that.
He didn't.
He did not say that.
Really?
And I will tell you, the prosecutor who was there, who became a friend of mine, I talked to a month before he died, which just happened recently. He said it did not happen categorically. No, that he didn't say anything in last words. And he did not say that.
He said nothing. Okay. Wow.
That was an urban legend.
Okay.
Well, good. I'm glad. Hey, we updated something.
Yeah.
Guys, this is incredible. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk with us. Karen Conti, Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. I can't wait to read this book.
Yeah, it's available in paperback. It's available on Kindle Unlimited if you are a subscriber, and the audiobook is also available. And the audio CD.
I'm the one reading it.
Great. That's great. Wow. I listened to some of it on your website, and you do a hell of a job with it.
Any other plugs?
Oh, I'm coming up. I'm writing a novel now. After I get past this promotion of this book, now I got the bug. I really like writing, so I'm going to try to write a novel.
Great. And then maybe you can get some serial killers out of your brain. Unless you're going to write a serial killer novel, then you're going to put them right back in your brain.
No one's going to die in my novel.
Very nice. Good. Congrats.
Good. No one ever dies in a book. That's what's nice. You can murder as many people as you want inside of a book. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, guys. Really a pleasure to talk to you.
It was a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Take care.
Live from your grave.
Now that's a smart lady.
You think that's what John, every time she left his cell, was like, now that was a smart lady.
Was a smart lady. You know,
how would you feel about sticking me in some clown makeup?
You already did it. But I do, like, it's wild to me to think about one of America's worst monsters as a human and hanging out. It's a human being with flesh and blood that you meet and talk to. And, like, just hearing the emotion in her voice talking about how, like, after that he was put to death, like, we talked a little bit afterwards about how there was a conflicted moment because it's a person. You're meeting a person.
Yeah, a person that she knew, that she spent a lot of time with over just a period of months and years. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that person is gone.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's fucking horrible. He's John Wayne Gacy. I mean, he's one of the boogeymen of the 20th century. And yet, like, she just, I mean, she proves at the end of the day, is like, they truly are just fucking dudes.
Unfortunate truth. That,
yeah.
That
yeah.
John Wayne Gacy is a normal human being. Well, not normal, but a human being.
He's yeah. a person. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that we've came across since we did our episode is that now we know that there have been up to, I think they say five unidentified victims.
Yeah, it was seven for many, many, many years. There were yes. seven out of the 33, or not 33, because 33 was the total number of victims. And I think he ended up dumping five at the end because he ran out of room in the crawl space.
Yeah, in the river.
But out of the ones that were in the base, in the crawl space, yeah, there were seven that were unidentified for decades.
Well, this dude, Francis Wayne Alexander, was just identified in 2021. And that really comes from the family pushing to figure out where their son went, which is extremely sad, but it took a long time. They said that the sheriff's department had worked with this thing called the DNA Doe Project, which uses genetic information to locate relatives of dead people who have not been identified. I think it's partially even more so in the world of DNA collection services that we see around. This is what's allowing some of this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, which I don't know if I'm jazzed about.
Ambivalent.
I'm ambivalent. It's when I wonder all the time. I'm glad we're catching people. Like, I'm glad we got the Golden State Killer, of course.
Yeah.
But it's like, hopefully they don't look for somebody's smoking too much weed.
That's the thing. It's legal now. You don't commit crimes.
I don't commit crimes.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't really have to worry about this.
No.
Yeah.
And even in my accountants will let me do tax evasion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you guys won't.
No.
None of
God,
you will
no.
let me. No, no one will let me no, do anything
to,
fun.
We have to talk you out of tax evasion every year.
I'm not allowed to make a surplus of weaponry.
I've done enough time for all of us.
Yeah, 4 days.
You really four have. 4 days in the clink.
You really
yeah,
have.
One for everyone in the room. No.
So what's it like being the closest to John Wayne Gacy of the three of us?
Physically, mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was impressed that he wanted to do clowning, although it just turned it out that it was just a way for him to, like, touch people.
Well, one thing I did not get to bring up when we were talking was the idea that, you know, I was saying before that he had multiple clown personas. The clown personas really did come out during the height of his murder spree.
Yeah.
Do you think he ever killed anyone dressed as a clown?
He definitely, there was one kid who was a survivor that said he was hanging out with John Wayne Gacy, and John Wayne Gacy was like, I'll be right back. And he came back in and he was in full pogo outfit.
Fuck.
He was,
yeah, like, and the dude's laughing at first.
Makeup. Yeah.
Because, well, the thing about it is, all right, so you're with your boss. Let's say you're a young man. You're with your boss. He says, come over to my house. We'll have a couple of beers. You go over that house. He puts on some pornography, right? Mm. You're like, cool, all
stack
right,
film,
with
please.
Your boss. Yeah, Stagfilm, thank you. And because what's nice about it, no difference between a pornography and a stag film. A pornography, a lot of them are still alive. Stag film means everybody dies. With John Wayne Gacy, he puts on this thing, and then he's your boss, and you're drinking a little bit, and first it starts with some straight porn, and you're watching guys. He's like, ah, check out this one. And then the next one's like, guy dressed up as a Dalmatian, another guy dressed up as a fireman. They're starting to go, like, having a different kind of fire get put out, you know? And John Wayne Gacy is like, let me check you back. Your big, fat, weird boss. And you're just sitting there like, maybe you don't know you're going to be, because they brought this up on this interview too, like how many of these guys showed up expecting there to be sex at the end of this arrangement. Mm-hmm. A lot of them didn't. Yeah. All of a sudden, you've got your boss in a full clown outfit, comes out for the back room after you've been drinking, and there's gay porn playing on the television, with projector, even worse.
Yeah, I mean, but how long did it take for them to put it on? That's a costume change.
I think he worked on it.
Oh, he would leave him there with some joints or something.
Yeah, he'd leave him there with joints and a beer and all that. And I would imagine that Gacy knew how to get in and out of that thing real fast.
The makeup.
Yeah.
It was actually pretty.
It was very simple.
And it changed a lot.
Yeah, it was very simple. And that's the other thing about his makeup that's fascinating about it is that he went against, like, one of the cardinal rules of clown makeup is that with clown makeup, you want everything to be very rounded.
Yeah.
And Gacy's makeup was very angular, which makes people uncomfortable.
Sometimes he had the round mouth occasionally.
Occasionally. But eyes were always like angular, which is gives it more of like this haunted harlequin feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't ever want to use angular makeup. It weirds people out, but I think he liked that.
Yeah. Of course, he was trying to upset people.
But I tell you what, that's where I'm a survivor of my own way, is that if he showed up there, I'd already be sucking that dick. Because I know for a fact you get that come out right the fuck now.
And then he takes a nap.
Yeah, yes. I want you guys, that's a lesson for everybody. If your boss, if you're just having casual drinks, and your boss emerges from there saying, with dress as a clown, saying,
don't
do you want
to
see
house,
a trick?
First of all.
Don't ever drink with your boss.
You don't want to, it's taking a step too far.
No.
But my main, honestly, just take that bullet, take that L for yourself, suck that dick right then.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out of the system.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then
you guys can go back to watching anything else. And then be like, hey, you see Ricky Stenicki.
Yeah.
You know, like that you kind of move towards it. Our good buddy Jermaine Fowler's in it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's Ricky a good Stenicki movie to see after you've gotten done sucking your boss's dick in a rumpus room. Toss on Ricky Stenicki. Now you guys can just laugh.
Are you inviting me over to watch Ricky Stenicki?
No.
Is that what's happening right now? Where do you think his porn collection is now? Is real to real porn?
Oh.
Like, did a cop have to like watch every second of that and then log what happened? And
I would imagine they just put all that shit into an evidence locker. Although they might have watched all of it. I would imagine all of these fucking Chicago, these Des Plaines, Iowa guys, like, stag party.
Yeah, dude.
And they all got together. It's like, where'd you get this? Fucking Gacy's place.
Yeah, and then they put it on and they're all like, oh, no. Are we supposed to be jerking after this?
I feel sad and happy and horny.
I'm just really glad. This was great. I'm glad that Karen Conti fought against the death penalty.
Yeah. No one deserves to die by the state.
We're not into it. I still think that they should be technically, I guess, trying robot drugs on them. But I feel like that's a whole other very unpopular opinion.
The state should not be killing anybody for any reason ever.
The state, the country, there's only like seven or like, there's a very small amount that are federally on death row right now. And when I worked with Jeff Ross doing their jail special, I learned a lot of things about death row. I learned that one out of
Jeff
20.
Jeff sent that dude to jail with the special.
And I'm going to get to that. That's what kind of changed my mind about death row, to be honest with you, and the death penalty in general. I know that one out of 20 people is presumed innocent on death row, which is a very horrifying statistic. That's way too much. Even one out of 100 is too much, but one out of 20 is a huge number. There was a fella that we interviewed when we were doing the jail special. And he has been recently convicted and sentenced to death for killing a professor over at Texas A&M. And he killed a very popular tenured professor. And he tried to kill his wife, who was in a wheelchair. He slit her throat. He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, the world doesn't need this guy. But when we interviewed him, which did not air in the special because we were like, that's too fucking weird. We didn't know who he was. We were in the violent section of the jail. And he basically said he was Asian and, you know, not Jeff's best joke. But he said, what are you in here hacking a computer? And he said, hacking's the, you know, you could say hacking for sure. You could say I hack someone's screen off. Is what he said.
Jeez.
And then later on we find out that what the crime that he was
that was
accused
confession
of
and murder,
but he wasn't supposed to be talking to anyone at the time, and so the state of Texas subpoenaed the footage from Comedy Central and then later used that interview as an excuse that he felt no remorse for the crime that he did and then sentenced him to death.
Jesus
and,
Christ.
And that was the day that I changed my mind on the death penalty.
Because you sent a guy to the chair.
I definitely felt some responsibility. And I was like, someone who I thought that should be dead, someone I thought that shouldn't be around anymore. And then once it came that close to home, I'm sorry that it had to take that. But I was like, this is awful. No one should, this should not happen. This is wrong on so many levels. He's a horrible human being. Lock him away forever. It's worse.
Exactly. It's so much worse.
You know, and so it's just like, now he's going to, in Texas, we know that they're like trying out new shit. They're trying to figure out new ways to kill people.
Well, it's like I said in the episode, is like there are no doctors that are involved in that. Like there's nobody that actually has gone to school for any, like these are just guys that are trying shit just because they may have read a couple of books.
Yeah.
And they're
kind of a fun job. Can I go do it?
Definitely. I'm sure it's not that hard to get in there. I know that John Oliver had a great expose on the death penalty recently. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it, but they're buying these chemicals from, I mean, chemical plants, people yes. who don't make medicine. Obviously, it's not medicine because it kills people.
Yeah.
But it's like they're buying it from people who had nothing to do with the human body.
Yes.
So it's very terrifying, horrible thing. And to know that 1 out of 20 of them are actually innocent shakes me to my core.
Also, we never know. And I think you brought it up, too. We never know what you're going to get out of these guys while they're alive. You don't know. Like, keeping them alive is a resource to learn in the future. I think that whatever it is we got to do to get that information, which I've learned is you just put a guy in a room, you'd be surprised they eventually just start talking.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much that we could have learned from Ted Bundy. There was so much that we could have learned.
A lot of it would have been horseshit, but it is sifting through the horseshit of these types of personalities that we get to see how they think. Mm-hmm. And the more we know how they think or the where they come from, the more there might be some form of science at some point that detects this before it blows up into murder. Mm-hmm. Like there might be one day some way to tell if a kid's going to grow up to be a serial killer. All right. Because no kid grows up wanting to be a junkie.
No.
Remember that? But I do know some kids that did like the idea of drugs very young.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but no one really wants to be like a serial murderer as a child.
Not as a child. No.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I never met one. Lucky for me,
I have not met one. No.
I have not either.
It's rare.
I feel like you were probably as close as you get.
I was just fascinated, but I knew I wanted to be in a more pure art form. Entertainment.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. You can watch this episode and every episode if you are a Patreon subscriber. Go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft to subscribe. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at LP on the left. Be sure to check out LPN TV on Twitch at twitch.tv/LPN TV, and you can watch everything that we do on the Twitch channel, on our YouTube channel.
Go to the YouTube channel, you can see it there. And you can go, want to see us a tour if you want to see us physically in front of you. Go to lastpodcastontheleft.com and get tickets for our new tour, JK Ultra.
Yeah, Denver's almost sold out. We're looking at you, Seattle. You're next. Then DC. We're rolling, baby.
Yep.
And we don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
They're calling again. There's scrambled eggs all over my face.
Oh, man. And when we come back this Wednesday on Twitch, we're going to have the brighter side. So I'm super excited to do that again. So
it'll be good.
We'll come check out Amber Nelson and I, and we will be positive. It is the exact opposite of the show.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Indeed. I can be positive.
You are positive.
Positive. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm positively amusing.
Yeah.
Hail Satan. Goodbye.
Hail Gin. Goodbye.
Hail Karen Conti.
Yes, please.
Oh, yes. Sure.
Goodbye.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.